All right. So what I'm going to do this hour, did thin a few of you out, but what I'm going to do this hour is take about 20 minutes to briefly hit our planning process on budgeting, and then I'm going to have the two cohorts that have helped me work on this come up, and we're going to talk about some best practices, and then I'm going to kind of finish up with the ACCS guidelines for accreditation, which were tremendously helpful for us when we were accredited. So I'll get into that pretty quickly here. We ready to go on the recording? Great. Like I said, one of the things that's a bit interesting, I've met a lot of headmasters in my time as a headmaster at Foundations or at St. Ambrose. And what most of you who are heads of schools are either like me, you came out of the business world, you came into running a school, or you have some ministry background and you came out of either a pastor as a pastor, or in some context you came from a ministry. And I think planning for our work is uniquely complex for both of us, because running a school is very much like running a business. Unlike a ministry, and I alluded to this earlier with you know, completely donation-based or tithing-based kind of a system, schools are obligated to provide a service. We're very much of a service-oriented business. When I went to graduate school, they had their little marketing class, and the first half of the year was product marketing, and the second half was services marketing, because in the business world, that's the dividing line. And in my experience, schools are very much a service-oriented business. And so they are also a ministry. And what we did, I'll just give kind of this prelude. When I first arrived at our school, we had 170 students, about. When I arrived as the headmaster, I've been on the board for a number of years, but we had about 170 students. And our budget, we covered about 80%, 85% of our operational budget from tuition. My goal the first year was to try and get that to 100% for two reasons. In the course of the transition between the prior headmaster and myself, there'd been a loss of morale and donations dropped, and so you couldn't fund the building on that. Or I'm sorry, not the building. You couldn't fund the operations on that. Secondly, when we went, I don't know if you were at my strategic planning session yesterday, but if you're always planning at least in detail 5 years out, which you should be, I did our five-year plan initially when I got there and realized we were going to, if we grew according to plan, we were going to outgrow our building in 3 years. And so you don't grow a building fast. You have to do it over time. So one of the decisions I made was to move all of our contributions into a building fund to secure the future of the school. And our city is a little unique. It's a fast, very rapid-growing city. When we got our loan, I talked to our bank in Chicago, and she had done some research to show the letter of credit holders is complex. But anyways, she said, "Why?" She talked to me. She said, "Wow, Boise is a happening place. You know, it's like the second or third fastest growing city usually." And she said, "You should see this place. I've got to try and get financing for in Detroit." She said, because our city grows like it does, there is no educational space in the city. So if we have charter schools like crazy cropping up everywhere. So. And as most of you know, educational rated facilities are required. You can't just stick, 300 kids in a basement of a church unless it's got sprinklers and certifications from fire marshals and you stand on your head and do all kinds of other things. So we moved all of our contribution income into our building fund, which was a good thing. It increased our donations in that area probably, what was it, 12-fold or something like that by doing that. But it means you got to kind of get unaddicted to those things. In my budget, you see a contribution line of about $20,000. So I'm going to talk about the piece we just handed out, okay? what you're looking at here is our planning system for the next year. But you'll notice from the date, it's for this year. And I gave you this one because the actuals that I gave you in the prior hour are based on this. This is where we got the budget numbers for that. So this was last year's planning system. And I'm going to go through and explain how this planning system works. You see at the bottom we have a $37,000 deficit there. We went into the year with a little bit of a deficit. We always do. It's usually, you know, $20,000, $30,000. You'll notice there's a line up there, total contributions, $20,000. We get contributions through a couple of programs from local businesses that give us the $20,000 a year regularly. So we go ahead and put that in the budget. The other $37,000 on the bottom line, we usually bring in about $80,000 a year in donations. So when I say that we're funding all of our budget from tuition, it's not entirely true. We do have about a $37,000. This year we had a $37,000. Prior years it's been plus or minus, you know, because if it's under 100, it's kind of in the noise with our contributions. And so the previous 3 years to this, we were in the black at the end of every year. The way I manage things, I just don't spend money if I don't have to. And so we end up a little under budget every year, and that kind of covers it. So I'm not saying, by saying you have to cover everything with tuition, that you need to have zero at the bottom of the line here or a positive number at the bottom of the line, but it needs to be within reason. I mean, $37,000 is a lot of money, but we get, I think, 40 or 50 from Scrip on normal years. So that fills that out. Scrip is a interesting thing if you have it. You have to have some passionate moms, and we have one or two of them. And so they get the little card table out and stick it in the front entryway every day and have pre-purchased Scrip cards on it, and you know, they dole them out. So that's the way we get that much out of Scrip, is passion. So I'm going to start down here. This is actually an Excel spreadsheet. So everything on here is automatic, and I would encourage you to set up an Excel spreadsheet for planning like this. This is the master sheet. It's the first page of the series, and all the numbers on here, I do not touch, I don't actually alter these numbers. They're all calculated from other sheets, and we're going to go through those sheets in a moment, but I want to familiarize you with how at least we do the planning. So on the revenue side, see our tuition there. We have something we call board scholarships. These are situations where the board is uniquely aware of some financial problems with families who've been at the school. Our parameters around this are they have to have been there for more than 2 years, and we have to personally understand their financial situation. And in those cases, we provide a little bit of money. You see our doubtful accounts line there. That's our accountant's clever way of saying, you know, those who don't pay. I'm glad she didn't call it deadbeats, but staff, tuition, fee, and scholarships. You see that line there? If you are giving free tuition to your teachers, I can't strongly emphasize enough that don't just ignore that. It needs to be in your planning and on your financials, because it's pretty telling. We got $165,000 in unrealized revenue from teacher students. One reason that's critical is that oftentimes you count your students and figure your income based on that, and it doesn't really work that well if you've got a bunch of them are coming for free. So be sure and get that in your planning process, so that even if you don't, if you just want to ignore it and pretend they aren't, those students aren't really there, you need to have it in your financials, because it'll show you how big of a liability you're incurring there. Estimated tuition income then is, and so we get to, and then we add in some fees, we come up with our total tuition and fees. About $1.1 million, $1.2 million there. Throw in some contribution and interest income. This is an operational account, so you notice I talked about earlier about that $50,000 swing we get from the sweep account. We don't take that money in into our operational budget. We have a separate budget that is our building fund, and it's effectively both our building and development. So all that money goes into the building fund, and that's where our we just keep it away from operations so that we don't mix the money. And so that $6,000 is just kind of passbook savings kind of stuff. And then down in expenses, you see our salary line there. And then we've got all of the breakouts of our... actually, before I go to expenses, I'm sorry, I'm jumping ahead here. I'm going to show you the sheet from which we get this. So the second sheet in our spreadsheet is the second page in your set here. I'm sorry, it's the third page. They photocopied the staffing on the back. So, again, I'm giving you pretty much... this is the bare bones of our real budget. I did black out the salaries of our teachers, but other than that, it's pretty much straightforward. So what we have here, kind of show you this. This area up here is our enrollment. And so as we're going through the planning process, this is what happens. I generate the sheet for the first time in February. And I take... we use RenWeb. How many people in here use RenWeb? Okay. Had a good conversation with somebody just briefly between the periods. And RenWeb has some issues with accounting. So I don't advise using much of their accounting stuff. But with regard to, it's very flexible. And we generate a report out of RenWeb. They can create custom reports. So we generate one that provides me with this. It's an Excel sheet that fills in this whole top portion, all right? And that top portion, I cut and paste it every month into here, and RenWeb then keeps track of where our enrollment is. So as soon as all our enrollment comes back in and we keep adding new, you know how it is between January and May, you're adding students and losing students the whole time. That every month is updated automatically, so I don't have to go change these numbers. I just export it from, my secretary exports it from RenWeb, sends it to me in email. I cut and paste it into here, and poof, we have our new forecast for the next year. You see, it calculates tuition. We usually do a percentage increase, and so you can see that I have last year's tuition on here so that we know what the increase was. And then that table in the far lower right is basically our multi-student discount table. That's why we have across the top there, you see the number of students in the school, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We stop at 5 because everybody's free after the 5th, so it's pretty much a wash at that point. So that's our mechanism for populating the first page, the very top of this. Yeah. They're counted in the match because they're deducted out later. Now, where you're asking, where do we get the free deductions? That's on the staffing page. It's a benefit, and so we'll get to that in a minute. But basically, we count every student, whether they're employees' kids or not, whether they're paying or not. They're all there, and then we deduct out those costs from, for example, that $165,000 figure there. If you look on the second page of what you have is our staffing, and the big white block in the center, or black block, depending on which copy you have, is where we have the actual compensation. On the right, though, you can see our tuition waiver amounts. I left those in so you can see how they add up. They go down and they add up, and that spreadsheet cell copies straight in the 165,000 copies right out of this. So that's where it comes from. Pretty much this system, this little spreadsheet that I have, is once I got it set up, forecasting takes minutes because the stuff comes in from RenWeb. We know what we've got already committed. In early months like February, March, April, I kind of have to guess because we know every year that our high point is at the end of May. So I know, you know, we're on a trajectory to hit, you know, 390 students or something. So we work with a bigger negative number right up until May. And then we finalize this July 15th because our first big payment is due July 15th. And we figure if they make the big payment July 15th, they'll probably continue through the year or they fall into that doubtful accounts category. So that's how that revenue side, I talked about that. Now I'm going to go back to the salary and expense. So we're back to this teacher thing there. our teachers. You can see all of them there. Those teachers, I categorize them as grammar school, secondary, administration. That way, down below, you see the summary table down here. It'll tell us how much we're spending. You know, this is a useful document as you're planning for figuring out what you're subsidizing. We have our teacher-student ratio in the high school is much lower than it is in the grammar school because we just don't have the numbers of students. So we can kind of look at this and go, oh, we're subsidizing, our grammar school is subsidizing our secondary by, you know, just do the math and it's pretty quick. There's actually a summary sheet that we call it our dashboard. This little block up here on the front page is our dashboard. And it just summarizes number of grammar school students, 251, number of upper school students, 103, total 354. The average tuition for each of those, and that's calculating off of the second page with multi-student discounts. So we don't actually charge $3,682 for a grammar school student. It's more than that. It's more like $4,200. But by the time all the discounts and everything gets in there, that's what ends up it ends up costing us. And then you can see our grammar school teaching FTEs, 16.5. Does everybody know what an FTE is, full-time equivalent? Sometimes we have two half-timers that equal one FTE. No, the only thing out of REN, this is something I created in Excel. And you may do something, you can look at these or you can do something different on your own. But the only thing RENWeb generates is our student count on that one page that I showed you. And this dashboard is basically taking numbers out of other places in the spreadsheet and calculating these numbers so that we can look at it every board meeting. We look at it, grammar school, FTEs, we got 16 and a half of those, and we got about 9.2 upper school, and then we got our administrative support. And you can kind of compare that to the enrollment and go, we're spending a little higher ratio on our secondary teachers than the primary and that sort of thing. Yes? No. All of the teachers' students are free in our system. All full-time. They have to be a full-time teacher. The students are free. No. We don't treat it that way. There's been some debate. I've been on a number of back and forth things, and the plurality of accountants that I've talked to have said it is not taxable if you do it right. Right. There's two different paths that I've seen, and that's one, that you require that the teachers send their kids to your school. That becomes a required a requirement for them, just like a uniform would be for an airline attendant or something. And so it's not taxable if you provide them. There's a company car is the same situation as, in this case, a student would be. There's another scheme under which that is considered not taxable, and I can't remember what it is right now. But there, I think actually Carrie is the one who gave me the other one, but I can't remember. Anyway, we looked into that. So thank you for that question. So now we get down to the expense line. You see our salary line there, and then all of the benefits that flow from that. Those are all calculated automatically on this second sheet here. And then you get our total payroll. Then you drop to our facilities. Basically, all other expenses are down below that. And if you go to our, that's the fourth page in here, called Expanded Budget Expense Categories. This is the spreadsheet that generates all of those. And what you can't see outside the printable area on the right side is that I have the prior year's expenses all listed out there. And these cells are calculated on a percent of growth. About half of them are on a percent of growth. You know, obviously your lease doesn't go up every year with the number of students, but your curriculum does. So it's all calculated. It's not showing here. It's off the bottom of the page. But I can change. The growth rate is automatically calculated off of the student page. So when every time I update RenWeb, you bring in the RenWeb data into there, it automatically comes in here and adjusts all our expenses based on the number of students that we have over last year, creates a percentage, and then multiplies it up. And so basically, when if you take the time with Excel to do this once, it's pretty much a no-brainer. It just you can just trust it to work. And I've used this sheet for 5 years. This is the first year I've missed. This year I didn't miss, but the coming year our forecast was off by about 15 students. I didn't anticipate the economy being quite the place it is. So anyway, that's the summary of our budget. I talk here about setting tuition. You know, a lot of people talk about setting tuition to cover 100% of enrollment, but another thing you have to consider is what will your market bear? That's a nice thing to say, but if your market isn't going to bear it, you've kind of got to be realistic in what you charge. So one way of making donations actually work for you is to use an endowment fund or a scholarship fund. Because then, a lot of us have students who would like to be at our school if they could afford it, but they can't afford it. Well, you can make it affordable if you have a scholarship fund. So that's one way to bring revenue that isn't just a pure donation. It's tied to scholarship or an endowment. I'm on point 5 of this outline again. I talk a bit here about designated funds, endowments. If you don't know what an endowment is, I'm sure you do, but basically it's just an investment that you have that pays interest, and you use the interest to fund scholarships or whatever. Effectively, our sweep account is a de facto endowment for our development director, as I described it. Let's see, long-range planning. one thing I can say... I've seen errors on both sides, but when you're setting tuition, one thing you really need to consider, and if you were at my strategic planning session yesterday, this really dovetails with the strategic planning process, because that's why it's so important to have 5 and 10 year plans. If you know where you need to get to, you can gently increase your tuition over the years. What you don't want to have to do is go, oops, now we need to get it up by 14 or 15%. Over a 2 year period, because then your parents, you're kind of caught in a catch-22. You'll lose more students raising it than you'll raise by the money, and so it becomes a net wash, and you're basically stuck. So do the planning process, figure out where your tuition needs to be, and work it up gradually over that period of time. Let's see, building funds. I talked about this. In our organization, we did an annual auction, and every year we had been bringing in between $50,000 and $80,000 on our annual auction. When I first got there, I said that I reverted all that money that was going to operations into the building fund and balanced our operational budget out of tuition. We raised, now this was with quite a strong visionary building. We had a lot of architectural documents and stuff, like I said, that I'll be showing later on. But with a really good plan, we were able to increase our giving to between $300,000 and $500,000 a year in our auction. And so for the last 5 years, we brought in between $300,000 and $500,000. And that's where that $1.6 million that you see on our budget line came from. So the power of giving is a lot better when you tell them what they're giving for, and when they see it as kind of a legacy and a substantiation of your vision instead of funding other people's kids. That's kind of what we have found in the process. So, and then I'm kind of just going to finish up real quickly so that we can get some time for some comments from the co-hosts of this. I kind of go through the budgets there. I had presented yesterday in the strategic planning our 5-year budgeting process, and so you can see that if you have those documents that's mentioned in B and C. And then ACCS financial reporting requirements. We were accredited in 2006, and just a crass commercial announcement. I can't recommend enough the accreditation process of the ACCS. We learned so much. It was so much more of an input to us. I joked with Patch that if I'd hired consultants to do what their accreditors done, I would have paid 20 times as much because or what the accreditors did. Because you get heads of other schools coming in and giving you the in-depth examination, looking at all your files, looking at everything, giving you ways of doing things that are better. Obviously, it's a lot of work for you to set up your documentation up front and get through that process, but that's a good discipline as well. So if you're eligible, I would recommend it. And I'm going to quickly go through the financial reporting requirements. An accredited school must adhere to effective internal controls. What we talked about earlier with the signatures and what have you accomplishes that. An accredited school must adhere to sound financial policies. And I'm not going through each item here, but you can kind of see what that entails. An accredited school must maintain the appropriate appropriate accounting. An accredited school must communicate aptly in financial matters, and an accredited school must be overseen financially. And the details are in this, but this is the part that I usually work on when I'm doing accreditation visits, is the financial side, just because of my background. And I think schools, either they fall in the category of they're making things too complicated, you know, we should try and keep it simpler, or they fall in the category that things just happen. And, you know, that's a good thing too. But you really need to, it's great to have somebody come in and examine what you're doing and verify that they can teach you stuff. I mean, I learned an awful lot from our accreditation team the first time and the second. So with that, I'm going to ask the co-moderators of this up to provide, they've been taking notes on comments of their best practices at their organization. So I don't know, Don or Ron or whoever. I'll turn it over to Ron first.
I'll probably be real brief. As with any beginning school, you're going to try to do best practices, but you have so many other things on your plate, it's hard to get everything correct. And so as you move along with your school, you are going to make mistakes. You are going to come across areas you didn't think about, and you just didn't have time or effort or personnel to fill that gap. So up front, just knowing that aspect of it, it's helpful in that because if we went into starting a school thinking that we have to get everything 100% correct and that we couldn't make a mistake, I don't think anyone would want to go and begin a school. It's just too great of a burden. The other thing as far as utilizing your parents, you know, they have a vast amount of benefit as far as the abilities that they have in their day jobs that can really help out the school. And just be able to go and capitalize on their abilities. With any school, you're not going to be able to go and hire everybody and pay everybody to do the jobs. And so you're going to have to go and utilize your parents to come in and even help with some of the financial aspects. You need to have someone who can coordinate that, someone who has that expertise. But as far as entering in some of the things in QuickBooks, if you have a system and procedures in place, they can follow those procedures. I was one of the ones that was able to go to David's school for his accreditation. And just as he's, you know, has said that they learn a lot as far as through the accreditation process, the people that actually go on those accreditation visits, we get to glean from the experiences of those schools. And some of the practices that David had at the Ambrose School were extremely well. Coming from his business background, they had a certain set of standards, and that's what he tried to incorporate in the school. And so even if you don't have expertise in areas where you need to have expertise, if you have well-defined standard operating procedures that can be followed, that will greatly benefit your school. And so you can have your moms and dads come in, and they can work off that standard operating procedure. It provides non-experts to come in to be able to do some of those accounting practices, but also it does put into place your procedures that are really required. Some of the things with tuition, you know, when you first start out your school, you inevitably scale your tuition lower than what it should be. And trying to meet the needs of the families coming in. And, you know, you want to go and look at your 5-year plan, your 10-year plan, and do as best as you can. But everyone has cold feet when you come into this business. It's an unproven product. It's new. And even though you hear inspiring messages at conferences like this and you get to talk with everybody, it's not a logos. It's not a foundation. You don't have that established track record in your hometown. And so you're up against that. And so you're afraid to charge what it's really going to cost you. So in a few years down the road where you see your successes and you see that you have more individuals that desire your product because it's a good product, you're going to take a second look at that tuition and realize we didn't charge enough. And so then you have to look and determine how can we go and get that tuition up to where it's really paying for the actual product we're providing. And, you know, we're one of those that saw that we needed to have roughly a 15% increase over the next 3 years. And we didn't lose parents, but because we had to make that change, you have to put other things in place. And we really try to bump up our scholarship fund so that those families that did face a financial difficulty, that they could come in and use that scholarship money. And that bridge really helped move the school more into a 100% tuition-driven school than what it was originally. All other things may come to mind, but I'll ask Don to come and share some of his experiences with Tall Oaks.
Thanks. The ACCS financial reporting requirements that Dave went over, that's a good thing to start with on day one, even if you can't, because of a limited personnel, get all of that in place, that you're always working towards that. Because if you're working towards accreditation, which hopefully you are, and in the financial area is the one place that can take you down or can take your school down because of something, sin is still prevalent in all of us, that you've got things in place to kind of keep that from happening. So you can build that into your 5-year plan. In other words, you say, I can't do all of this year one or year two, but over the next 5 years, I can build that in so that those things are always in place and you're not having to kind of start from scratch. We say, well, now we're ready to start accreditation, and well, we don't have any of these things in place, and then you're starting all over again and it makes it difficult. So it's just, these are good practices to have in place right off the bat. Actually, we didn't even have these principles laid out, I don't think, in the initial accreditations. That's a new thing that the ACCS board has just passed recently. Also, on the finance end, because it is a complicated thing and because many of your board members really don't need to get into every detail of these financial reports. If you have a parent, as Ron talked about, or a CPA that can work with you and with the headmaster, and you have a finance committee from the board so that all of that can be done each month and the board can have all these reports in advance to see before your board meeting, and then if they have a question, you can answer it. And then you know every board member doesn't have to get in every detail. Board members have enough to do without having to think they need their hands in everything. Of course, that's always a struggle in starting new schools and making that transition of how much the board is involved. But if you can get those who are qualified to be involved for the rest of the board, and then the whole board doesn't have to be involved in that. Another thing is, somebody asked about where there's a lot of details of things in budgeting that aren't showing up on the main school budget. There's a couple of things you can do with that. You can have a couple of separate budgets with their own worksheets, maybe in athletics, let's say, and you have a line item that could be, you know, $20,000 in income and $20,000 expensed, but you can have a separate spreadsheet, separate budget that you can keep an eye on how all of that works, and just let those figures come in to the budget. Then it's not in your, you know, with all the extra categories that he was talking about in your main budget. And you can do the same thing with some other things. It may, if you charge a book and activity fee, and you want to keep a track of where all of that goes, and it's money in and money out, then do the same thing again. You have a line item on income and expense, but you have a separate Excel spreadsheet so that you can, all that can be tracked easily, and it's not a lot of new categories again into your budget, and that'll help keep that clean, but still be able to track those individual things. I'm not sure that there's a need to always have an audit, quite frankly. There's about three levels of things that can be done, and there's a thing called a financial review that will give you all the same sheets for anybody to see as an audit. The audit will get down into a lot of details that you don't generally need, and it may be, I think there's some IRS things that once your fundraising reaches a certain threshold, then you have to have this. But most of us aren't anywhere near there. So that's not an issue. And then sometimes it depends on banks for building. When Schaefer did theirs, you didn't need an audit. And I mean, how much do you have in your building now? How many millions of dollars is it? Okay, and then they've had some additions and things, labs and other things. They didn't need an audit for their bank. But then on this, then you all did need an audit, and so their first audit was just when they started doing their building. So don't assume that you need an audit. The financial review will cost you about half of what an audit will, and it'll give you the same reports, the same thing, and companies giving grants, companies matching things, companies doing things, even banks, that will generally be enough. So check into that. It's always good to ask questions first. Don't just assume because somebody told you you have to have an audit. You know, check that out because, again, that's just another way to save money as well as time. One of the things Dave talked about that they only charge 10 months out of the year. When I came to the school, that's what they were doing, but, you know, we weren't paying bills 10 months out of the year. We were paying 12. And so that kind of didn't work very well. Plus, I thought, you know, I really don't want parents having 2 months where they're not paying something. So think about it and I'm just going to do numbers that are easy, that work well. But let's say your tuition is $5,000 a year, and they're making, let's say $6,000, and so they're making $600 payments in 10 months. Why not spread it over 12 months, and it's only $500? That sounds better. They're saving $100 a month. But see, they're paying every month, and you've got the income coming in every month because you have it going out. Plus, there are not those months where they can think, boy, I really liked having this extra $600. Maybe I'd like to do this every month and find an alternative for my child instead of in the school. So, I mean, if you've got to be paying bills, and in part of that, you know, I don't know how you pay your teachers, but I would encourage you paying them 12 months, regardless of what they want. Because if you pay the 9 months or 10 months, and they're learning to live on that amount of money, and then comes these other months, and they still need that amount of money, which means they need to find another job or another source of income, the pressure's on to find it. But if they are paid the same amount over 12 months, and then in the summer they have an opportunity, you know, to earn some other money, then that's addition, and that can help them with other expenses. But they've learned to live on that amount. Because who are they going to come to when they can't pay their bill? Well, they're going to come to you because you're the source of their income. So it just helps us all, to learn, you know, to live on less, and then when you have more, then you can use them for other things that you need them for. Another thing on dealing with some of the cash input, one way to sort of eliminate that so it doesn't show up as a budget item is just make it whatever your item is. It doesn't really matter whether you show it as income or expense because it's a zero budget item. But what happens is all the income and expenses, whichever it is, go into the income or just go into the expenses. For instance, if you have to take up money for field trips, let's say, well, the income comes in as, you know, you've got $150 for this field trip, and then the expenses comes out of that same account, not out of the expense account. You make it all come in income. That keeps it zeroed out, so it doesn't look like an operating expense for your school, but you can go in QuickBooks and you can look and see where the money came in and where it went out because it's all there, but it always zeroes out. And that way you can see if you're making sure that these are zero accounts. In other words, you're in trouble if you have, it's supposed to be a zero account and it's coming out a negative $1,000, you know, you've got a problem. So you can see where it is, but it doesn't become a line item because it's not an operating expense in the sense of money that you have to raise. It's money that should be coming in for that. And then just one other thing that I think is helpful, and I don't know how, you know, often pastors don't get paid as much, but I think that if a pastor, that who you really want to have kids in your school are pastors, because they are the ones that are standing before people preaching. And you know, one of the big struggles that we find are pastors who often aren't even willing to take a stand that that it's the parents' responsibility to educate their children, and they ought to be doing it, you know, through homeschool or Christian schools. They've got too many public school teachers in their congregation. Lots of things put lots of pressures on people that you don't think about. So, you know, one way you can help out is we don't advertise this because I don't want pastors coming to the school because of this discount. But those who come and want the sort of education we have and want to come, is we give them a 50% discount. Because I believe that he can stand up there, a pastor can stand up there all day and talk about Christian education. But it says a lot if his children are already in the school and they're making that you know, commitment themselves. And that speaks volumes to the other families in the church. So
I had just a couple things I needed to add here. I told you I'd tell you about depreciation. I don't think I did that right. So two different ideas on depreciation. Accountants, if you talk to accountants, they want you to depreciate because it's the way they're taught. There's also some benefits. That's why we have two philosophies on depreciation. In our organization, aside from our building, we depreciate everything to zero. We basically expense everything immediately. The reason is that the depreciation schedules that are out there that allow you to depreciate over time are designed for tax purposes, and they have no bearing on reality whatsoever. I have not yet found a depreciation schedule that makes sense. And, for example, you can depreciate a building completely in 30 years. Well, I've never known of a building that's worth less than 30 years. So the principle we use is we expense everything, because then we don't have to. I have board members who are laymen who, you know, every time I've had depreciation on my books, they see a loss, a huge loss, because depreciation shows up as a big loss. And, you know, I swear I'm going to kill off a few board members, losing just a few heartbeats every board meeting when then they oh, yeah, that's right, that's that depreciation thing. So I just got rid of it, said we'll expense everything. We have no tax to pay anyway, so there's no tax benefit to it. Accountants will say, yeah, but that violates GAAP. They're right. Some people say that it needs to be on your 990. Well, they've accepted ours for many years without it, but I'm not going to argue with it. It's just our philosophy is to expense everything. The other thing, at the back of this document, I do our five-year forecast. And I want to tell you how I do that really briefly, just so you know. For 2 years out from where I am in this process, I create the same spreadsheet that you see here. I included, I think, in here 2008, 9, and 2012, 13. I used two different mechanisms. For the next year beyond the one that I'm forecasting, I do it student by student. I figure, okay, I always have 40 incoming kindergartners. I'll throw them in there. I know each of these grades is going to move up one. To kind of figure it out. Beyond that, I use percentages. You just look at your history and say, we've grown by 5% every year. We've grown by 10% every year. So I just grow all the lines by 5% or 10% for the year 3, 4, and 5 in my forecast. Because when you start getting out that far, it gets meaningless to try and predict exactly how many students you're going to have in each grade. So you can do that for a year or two, and then the rest of it, just do it by percentages, and it gives you some growth ideas. So those are just what I wanted to cover. Did you have something real quick you wanted to say?
Just two things real quick. One way that we were able to shy away from doing a full audit was having a good relationship with our banker and a good relationship with our CPA that we worked with our books. And the CPA and the banker, they had a good relationship. So we had a proven track record over a long period of time. And so with that proven track record, that's how we were able to go and not do a full bore audit, which would be, several thousand dollars. The other thing, as far as, a school, it's a ministry, but it's also a business. And in some aspect of your school, you're going to have a contract with your parent, whether it's going to be the contract for the full tuition or a contract as far as a promise that they will have their child attend school and you'll have some type of deposit or other aspects as far as dealing with money. And many times those will say that this money cannot be transferred or will not be returnable, refundable. You will be accused of being a bad Christian multiple times by multiple different individuals. It doesn't matter the economic status of that person. Many times they want that money back, even though they knew full ahead of time that they were obligating themselves to that payment. So just, you will be accused of that. And you're not a bad Christian for having them confirm an obligation to the school, because we make commitments to our parents, we make and commitments to our teachers based upon those finances. So, sure. Usually, we have a couple of form letters that we'll send out and try to gently work with them. But usually, it's not something that's immediate. If they're delinquent on tuition, we try to work with them. If this is too much or if they're going through a hardship, it's not, okay, you're out the door. We'll try to work with that parent and say, okay, how much can you afford this month? And have them pay that. And then how much can you pay this second month? And work with them as trying to work within their budget, but also fulfill their obligation. If it becomes where they're not able to go and fulfill that, if they don't qualify for a special scholarship, then we have to let them go. It's always difficult. Do you have a comment? We've done that once, but it wasn't profitable for us, and basically we just wrote it off as bad debt. It's whatever your philosophy is on that. But many times we still have the power of not providing them their grades. So if they don't pay, we don't transfer their documentation. So it ends up where they would want to pay when I transfer the documentation.
one of the problems I have with collections is that the people you're giving it to aren't Christians, and so they're not going to represent you very well, more than likely. So I don't advise that.
It's a hard lesson that we learned that too.
Go ahead. We have 4 or 5 believers that aren't really. We have one that's associated with the school directly, our secretary, and then we have a CPA. We have another gentleman from another church, and one other person. They review the documentation. We have forms that they submit. They submit their tax forms and other forms, and they review it. Actually, our board doesn't get involved with that at all. It's those individuals. They ask the questions. They review the information and take care of that. I know there's outside agencies that actually take care of those issues, and that's something that we'd like to do. But our scholarship money isn't always known as far as how much we can give. Yeah, and just to reiterate for the comment, there are agencies out there that go and take on that role, and then they provide, based upon their evaluation of their finances, provide a number. And then once you get that number, you can do the percentages and work with that. You know, we're really fortunate. We really have very little unpaid tuition, unpaid debt. I mean, so we don't really, it's not significant enough to factor it into our budget. I mean, our budget is like $2 million, so it's not, we really don't factor that in.
We do 1% last year, 2% this coming year.
Any other questions?
Yeah, putting those expectations up front so they know exactly what they need. I mean, we have late fees and we have the letters going out in time periods. One of the other things that's really been helpful is to have automatic deposits from their checking account. that alleviates those late fees. Because I know with my children, even though I'm on the board and my wife teaches there, I've had to pay those late fees. And so having those automatic payments, you know, you get so involved in other things, it's a good deal for the parents and also for the school. I think our time is up, so we'll be up here for the questions and discussion. Thank you very much.